answers? Mm. I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Tell the truth.
The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates.
That's right.
The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice, and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
God is a solution. God is 12-step.
I like where he's going here.
Helps the community grow, helps us grow. Monty has done a phenomenal job, and you're talking about taking people through a spiritual process, getting them into recovery.
Thanks, Monty, and thanks for all your support.
We need spirituality to make this thing work long-term.
It's an absolute pleasure. You certainly know a lot of people.
This is one of the places that is about the business of the solution.
And now, broadcasting on location somewhere in the vast expanse of the Pacific Northwest, it's the over-opinionated 12-step-ologist, the Monty Man.
Yish! Well, I'm just giddy today. I am just absolutely giddy. You know why? You know why? Because I've had my Black Rifle coffee. Yes, I have. Yes, I have. Two cups, as a matter of fact. I don't do things in excess. Do I? I got my cowbell. I got my fluff machine. I've got my party favors. I'm ready to go. Roger McDermott is on the show. Dave Fleming is on the show. Everybody's on their video cameras. Hey, guys, what's going down? Woo! I need another cup of coffee. Welcome to the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show. We'll see how it goes this week. The topic is confession, a step five, boy, see, man, I'm all over the map. A step five discussion.
Steps to confession.
5 steps to confession. So we're gonna be talking about that. Hey, listen, next week's show, Dr. Sarah McLeod, I think is how you pronounce her name. She's a clinical psychologist who has specialized in addiction and codependency for over 30 years. And after 30 years of her own sobriety, she was forced to confront the shame of her husband's continual relapsing. And, she talks about all that in her new book, Co-Crazy. And she's going to be on the show. We're going to be giving a couple of these books away as well. So you don't want to miss that next Monday. Co-Crazy, One Psychologist's Recovery from Codependency and Addiction. So a lot of times we think that the psychologists and the psychiatrists and the counselors and the mentors and the pastors and the rabbis, they got it all together. But let me tell you, they're a little co-crazy themselves. And she is willing to admit that and put it in a book and share it for all you guys. And then, of course, sponsoring this show is Dr. Alan Berger with his book, 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, Getting Your Recovery Unstuck. This book is amazing. That's all I'll say about that. For your copy, go to abphd.com, and he'll autograph it for you and send it your way. That's also available on Amazon. All right. Let's see here. What's next? Uh-oh.
Excuse me, Monty Man. Excuse me. It's that time once more that keeps us rolling on the floor. It's time for your weekly wine. We hope to goodness that you make it shine this time. We try to avoid the complaint. After all, you're not a saint.
What?
But because this is your show.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, let's go. Go, take it away, Monty Man.
Okay.
Take it away.
Yeah.
All right. What did it take to come up with that one?
I don't do these things. The producer does this, stays up until all hours of the night, and well, that's a whole nother multi personality problem.
It's another co-crazy problem.
Co-crazy, yes.
So Dave Fleming is coming to us from Corvallis, Oregon. Roger Fleming is coming to us from Huntington Beach, California. And I'm coming to you from...
I think he got your name wrong, Roger.
They did?
They did?
Yeah. He said Roger Fleming.
I did not. Did I? See, I believe just about anything right about now. Man.
I wasn't even paying attention, so it could be very well true. I don't know.
See?
I heard Roger. That's where I stopped.
Roger McDermott, Huntington Beach, California. Dave McDermott and Roger McFleming. McFleming. Sounds like a new McDonald's hamburger. I'd like a McFleming, please.
McFleming. Yeah, yeah. Double McFleming.
All right, the weekly wine. I gotta turn down my gain a little bit. The weekly wine. Okay, so everybody knows that I have no problem naming names when I want to throw somebody under the bus. I don't know, and I don't know that they're down in Southern California yet. Maybe they are. But Ziply Internet Services, are you familiar with Ziply, Roger? No? How
no,
about you, Dave?
Never, no.
Nope.
So Ziply is a new internet company that uses fiber optics instead of cables. And what they like to do is they like to come into your yard without your permission. It's interesting because when they started stringing their fiber optics all over the town of Albany, they were coming onto people's property, and what happened was Ziply hired a company to do this, and that company hired, sub-hired or whatever you call it, people to do it. And those people, none of them spoke English that I ran into. Because when they came into our yard and started trampling down our flowers in the corner part of our house, we live on a corner, they didn't say anything to us. They didn't say they were coming. They didn't, none of that stuff. They climbed up the telephone pole. They ran their wires for like 3 weeks. And I went out there. I said, hey, what are you doing? And they just looked at me, no English, no English. I'm like, okay, you couldn't get a hold of Ziply. There was no number until you. When I finally did, the person I was speaking to didn't speak very good English and couldn't understand me. So we let it go, and they ran their fiber optics all through the neighborhoods. The city of Albany got so many complaints that, from what I was told, one of the companies that they hired got fired. And supposedly the city of Albany took care of it. I'm not sure. But a salesperson showed up at our door a week ago. And my son was out in front. And he said, hey, listen, my dad's not going to be interested. He's got a running deal with another internet company because he has a radio station and podcasts and so forth. So he's not going to be wanting to talk to you. And the guy said, oh, okay, that's fine. And he went about his way. Well, that same guy showed up a few days ago, and we have a ramp. So if you can picture this, listeners, our front door, we have a brand new porch, and then we have a ramp that goes down to the sidewalk. And at the end of that ramp, we have a rope that is tied off that makes it very obvious to anybody approaching the house, we're not interested in you coming up the ramp. Now, I put it there because we've had a lot of door-to-door salespeople lately, and so I put the rope there, right? Well, the Ziply salesperson that my son talked to, you know, like a week and a half ago that said that's fine and walked away was the same guy that has returned, climbed over the rope, walked up the ramp, and begin to ring the doorbell multiple times and knock multiple times and ring the doorbell again. Caught it all on camera. So I called Ziply. Again, couldn't get through to anybody that spoke English until finally I was able to get hold of a woman who could understand me enough to understand what my complaint was, and hopefully it's taken care of. We'll see. Ziply Internet is supposedly centered in Beaverton, Oregon, but when you go to that phone number, it just takes you to somebody with broken English in some phone center. So you can't get through the office unless you actually drive up there and walk in the door. That's my whine. I want to know if you've ever dealt with salespeople that are that that convinced that they're going to get you to answer your door. Have you ever had that problem, Dave?
Nope.
What's wrong with me? What about you, Roger?
I've had numerous salespeople come to my door. I don't know that I've had them do what yours did, but I get a lot of text messages, phone calls, and occasionally they come to the door.
Yeah.
But once I tell them I'm not interested for ABC reasons, they usually don't return.
They don't return. Yeah. No. But nobody's climbing over your threshold and.
Oh, no. Well, I don't have a rope in front of my house, but no.
Yeah. Well, you know, and so then what I did was, and I said I was never going to be this guy, but never say never, right? I ordered a very nice brass framed sign that goes underneath our address that says, no soliciting, please. And I don't know, you know, we were always taught when coming up in the salesman marketing training, you know, programs that many of us went through when we worked for Cutco Cutlery or Amway or whoever, right? The houses you want to target are the ones that say no solicitors, because the reason they have that on their door is because they can't say no. So you want to go after those people. So, I don't know if this is going to work or not, but my gosh, if you've got a gate that's locked or you got a rope up and somebody's climbing over it, you know, somebody's crossing the line. So there you go. Ziply, you've been called out. I feel much better now. Don't you guys? Don't you feel much better?
Your name must be on the list.
Yeah, right? Right?
Yeah, go see Monty because he's that guy.
All right. Yeah, I don't know if you guys watched, on a whole different note, and this is not a whine, but I don't know if you guys watched the Grammys last night, but Taylor Swift became a record breaker. She's won now 4 Albums of the Year awards, Grammy awards. No one has ever done that. So congratulations to her. But the person I was most impressed with was Joni Mitchell. And she's not doing well health-wise. She's 80 or 81, something like that, but she recently turned 80 something. And she sang the entire, every verse of Both Sides Now. She's pretty much lost her singing voice, which is sad because she had an amazing voice. But Joni Mitchell was one of my heroes. You know what I mean? Growing up, it was Carole King, Carly Simon, Joni Mitchell. You know, they said the male counterparts to that were like James Taylor, John Denver. It was that kind of music that I loved. And to see Joni Mitchell, them honor her last night amongst all the shenanigans that the Grammys tend to do, I thought was pretty classy. They had her on there. She was sitting down. They started out with her chair, the back of the chair, to the audience, and then it swiveled, and then she, you know, came out and she sang Both Sides Now. And even though she couldn't really sing well anymore, it was in the spirit of the whole thing. It was very moving. And so if you got to watch that, awesome. There still is some good in these award shows. Few and far between, but there's some stuff going on that's pretty fun. So there you go. So we're going to move from this segment into our next segment with a little Joni Mitchell, and we'll be back right after this with the topic.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess. This is Tony Morosi from the recovery band Self-Esteem, and we're listening to the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show with the Monty Man on KHLT Broadcasting.
Hey there, it's the Monty Man from Take 12 Recovery Radio. Have you been struggling with addictions and behaviors that seem to have you stuck and without hope? Well, here's my question. How soon do you want to get well? Well, I'd like to introduce you to Came to Believe Recovery and the amazing retreats that are designed to jumpstart your recovery by offering the chance to go through the steps that have worked for hundreds of thousands of us since they were first described over 80 years ago. This 3-day weekend retreat gives you an immersive opportunity to achieve a spiritual awakening that leads to hope and freedom. For retreat dates and locations and much more, visit CameToBelieveRecovery.org. That's CameToBelieveRecovery.org. Freedom is waiting for you. The question is, what are you waiting for?
Yes, you have, girl. Don't you know you got to tell the truth, yeah?
Otis!
Baby, why don't you tell me the truth now?
Tell the truth.
You know you.
And now, back to our show.
Ain't crazy that you want me to do.
Ow!
Yes, you have. Yeah, watch it. Loving you.
Gosh, I love me some Otis Redding. Yeah, what a talent. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. We opened up the show with a sound clip from Eric Clapton called Tell the Truth. Telling the truth is not always easy, particularly when it pulls the covers off of some of our behaviors. In step five, we really get into that. Speaking of the steps, and to reflect a little bit on the sound bite about Came to Believe Recovery, we're going to have Alicia Martinez and the CEO of Came to Believe Recovery, Tom Williams, on the show on February 26th. The Monday before that, Dave Fleming's show, Solutions for Life Today, we're going to be talking about pride. We got a full month. But Tom Williams and Alicia Martinez, and then Roger's going to be co-hosting with me. We're going to be talking about their organization, Came to Believe Recovery, and what they're doing. They're doing amazing work, and they've been doing it for a while. One of the steps in going through the 12 steps of any 12-step program is the confession step. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him is step three. Step four, of course, is the inventory step. And there's a bunch of stuff, if you've done a thorough and searching fearless moral inventory, that's packed into that. Moving into step five, however, we take that stuff that we've jammed into step four, and what I have found, and obviously what you two guys think about this, a whole lot more stuff came to the surface when I started moving into my fifth step. So I just want to read this one part in here as referencing the fifth step. It's in chapter six from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called Into Action. I love the title because it suggests that we've got more work to do. And it says, having made our personal inventory, that's step four, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now, these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. Now, that's a mouthful. That's a mouthful. In a minute, I want to read to you a part that describes me, and I'll see if it describes either one of you guys as well. But... Did you find, Dave or Roger, chime in here. Did you find that even more was revealed to you when you started working a fifth step than was just in step four?
Certainly. I think mine was, my first one that I did was kind of writing an outline. It wasn't necessarily going into a whole lot of detail, just because the setting that I was at, I was in a residential program for 28 days, and you know, I was all new and I didn't know what the heck to expect, and so I figured I'd just write some key points. And then when just kind of some I can't think of the word today, my brain's not working, but once I've got to do my fifth step, I would be give me talking points to kind of expound on a little bit more. And, you know, it's like the old behaviors, right? You know, yeah, if it's not in writing, it never happened kind of thing. But if I just write little notes to kind of get me prepared, then I can kind of go from there during the discussion.
Yeah. Roger, how about you? Did new stuff come to light in step five?
So it's been a process for me and a journey. When I did a thorough moral inventory, I pretty much went through everything that I could actually remember. But I had a, if you will, a spiritual awakening when I heard Clarence Schneider talk about, it's not about all the stuff that we did, it's about our nature.
Right.
And when I really thought and began to understand that, accept it, I came to realize then that any secrets that I was going to take to the grave, so to speak, as you hear so many times from people talk about it, were the very things that could kill me, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, but it was definitely an unveiling as time went along. But when I realized it was about my nature and not about all the junk that I did as a result of my disease, that was important, because moving on from step five, my nature was still there. So it was that understanding that,
wow,
yeah, frequently things would come to my mind that I'd completely forgotten about. That still happens today. And I actively try to share about those things in the appropriate setting, whether it be a meeting or if I'm speaking at a meeting or whatever's going on. I just don't have any secrets anymore. And you hear so many times about the things that we're going to take to the grave, the things that I'm never going to tell anybody. Well, I've come to realize and learn that those are the things that'll take us out.
Yeah.
Either we'll have no emotional sobriety and we'll stay dry, or eventually the pain will get so great because of the stuff we've stuffed that we're going to resort to thinking that a drink or a drug might somehow allay that issue, somehow make me feel better, and that's a lie from hell. It's just not true. So I find that the way to take the power out of those deep, dark secrets is to share them. Share them with your sponsor, share them with a spiritual mentor. Not always is it appropriate to share in a meeting, but if you've got a step study meeting and you're with a group of men, sometimes they come out in those meetings to where, you know, I've uncovered something that I didn't realize. And it's always about my nature. My nature is messed up. And it was messed up before I ever took my first drink or drug. And when I realized that, it shed a different light and insight into what a step five really is. And so I think we clear out the negatives and we start focusing on the positives. We look at all of our character defects as the negative liabilities, but then we look at the assets, the spiritual gifts that we get as a process of doing the steps, and we start living and acting and talking about those. And so that helped me a lot in sort of reflecting on step five.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you say something, I think it is so important here, that it's about the nature of it. So, you know, in step four, we talk about, and it's repeated later too, we talk about, where had I been selfish? Where have I been self-centered? Where did I, you know, arouse jealousy? You know, those are more directed towards the nature of what's going on than the symptom, right? because some of the what is referred to in the fifth step as every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past, those really are symptoms, right? So, you know, I shared this without any hesitation because I've shared it publicly before, but, you know, one of the places that I would go to when I would try to change the way I was feeling by using mind-altering substances was I would go hide in very dark places. I was convinced that if you couldn't see me, you know, and you meaning anybody, if you couldn't see me, then I'd be safe. And I could bury myself in my dysfunction and change the way I felt and nobody would see me. You know, so I would go places that were dark. I would go, you know, hang out in the adult bookstore in the far corner and just stay there. You know, and use substances, or I'd go to a park where it was the darkest, deepest corner of the park and bundle up in a coat and an old sleeping bag and just hide there. You know, well, the deal of it is that when I got into recovery and some of these behaviors were still happening, I was still doing that stuff, but in a different way, but it was still the same thing. I was bundling up spiritually and hiding the stuff that was the nature of my wrongs. And as long as I hid it from you, you couldn't see it. And I discovered I was doing the same thing. It was just showing up a little different, right? And so when I did my fifth step, looking at the wrongs that I had done in my fourth step, this started to become a realization to me, but it didn't happen until my confessions and where this stuff started coming out. I was, oh my goodness, the outward manifestation of the inward condition has changed, but the inward condition is the same. I'm still hiding. I'm still not wanting to get honest. This really isn't happening. This isn't me, so therefore it's not happening. I'll never forget walking out into the yard at Oregon State Penitentiary, looking up at the gun turrets and thinking to myself, this isn't really happening. This isn't me. Still afraid to face, in this case, a healthy fear inventory, right? And so in my fifth step, working around why I had to spend some time as a guest of the state, it was very difficult to admit those things. Did you find one, and I'll ask you, Dave, first, did you find one particular thing harder to admit than another, or were you pretty ready to just lay it all out on the table?
I'll tell you, when I was ready to go to actually inpatient treatment, and I was ready to do, at least I thought I was ready to do whatever it took. And, you know, I went through, I had a good counselor, and she actually had me go through, I basically did it all the way up to step 8 while I was still in the program. And when I did my fifth step, my goal was to leave it all there, not hold anything back.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until after I left I hadn't remembered something that I'd forgotten about. And that was, you know, I've shared this before, where I happened to be taking a class at church, and I sat down with my pastor and the pastor that was leading the class and did kind of a step 5/step 10, as it came up. So, and then the second time I went there, I was already, you know, ready to do the old, just do the next right thing, whatever that is, you know, the whole honesty thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't an issue because, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets, and I had had my spiritual awakening, and as long as I'm telling my story, nobody can hold it against me. But then they threw, you know, God kind of threw me a curveball when I went to do my fifth step again. And my idea was to make sure I included everything this time.
Yeah.
The person that I was expecting was on vacation. So there was another person in there, and then I put it off, and then I decided I got to just do it.
Yeah.
And but unfortunately, I did the same thing. I left some things out. It wasn't in my intention. But and then I just, you know, took care of it later. But I got to the point where I was done. Like there was no keeping secrets for anything.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to shout all of them from the rooftops everywhere I went.
Right.
But right, because we got to
use some wisdom.
Our audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
We got to pick our audience. But yeah, I knew that I had to get everything out, otherwise I'd be stuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got tested right out of treatment too. I've told you this before, where the test was like, are you really going to do the next right thing? Are you really done with secrets? Mm. And things like, you know, having 4-pack of wine coolers sitting in a cart next to my truck, or getting stuck too much change back from the store, or, you know, that stuff's on a whole different topic. But the idea is what are you going to do about this? Are you going to keep doing what you're doing and not keep secrets and do the next right thing? Or are you going to go back to what Roger's saying, your old nature?
Yeah. Yeah. So did either one of you find that in working your step process at any point, whether it was at 1 or 12 or in the middle at 5, that certain things that you used to do, maybe the cash register honesty thing, the things that you used to do that seemed minor, that were wrong, that you couldn't do them anymore? And one of mine was littering. Now, I wasn't a horrible litterer, but it would be nothing for me to take a package from a stick of gum and flick it out the window after I put the gum in my mouth, you know, while I was driving. I found myself starting to do things like that and going, I just don't want to do that. You know,
yep.
It's interesting because, you know, how God will entrust us with the small things, and then once we are entrusted with those, he'll give us little bigger things and little bigger things. That's how it kind of started out in my life, and it was happening in my fifth step. Things were beginning to change. My behaviors, I'm like, when did I stop doing that? When did it become something that bothered me that I did that, so I just stopped doing it, you know? And it was somewhere in that. Roger, how about you? Did you have anything like that that was just like, I just don't do that anymore?
I think it's a constant journey that we're on.
You know,
that concept in the big book that talks of to thine own self be true. I was a constitutional liar. And what I came to realize that the things that I drank over allowed me to do the things that I knew were wrong. When I drank or used, I would do things that if I wasn't under the influence of something, I wouldn't have done.
You wouldn't have done.
I wouldn't have done them. And so when I faced that reality, it's like, well, my character defects are operating long before I ever took a drink, because that was just to make them okay when they weren't okay.
Right.
So then littering or any of the little things that we, you know, I used to think laws were made to be broken. Well, that's an absolute lie. They're not made to be broken. Oh, you know, all the lies that I believed and accepted, when the truth came out, you know, it's like, I can't do that. Why am I doing that? Why am I? And everything was self-centered. Everything. Mm-hmm. Everything. And I thought I was chasing this good feeling, but when I came to, it didn't feel good at all. So then I had to resort to more mind-altering substance to make it okay.
Yeah.
To do the very things that weren't okay in the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
And it's pretty soon, I just don't want to have any secrets. I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief, and I don't want to be a liar, cheat, and a thief, but that's my nature. So I have to do things that are contrary to my nature.
Yes.
And it just goes on and on and on. This has nothing to do with drinking or using.
That's right. That's right.
And so I love that the 10th step gives me the ability to do a fifth step whenever I need to, promptly. And I love that.
Yeah.
I don't have to take anything to bed to something that I did that was not right during the day, I can ask God for forgiveness. I can make amends. I can do whatever is appropriate so that I don't have to wake up in the morning with a bunch of junk in my head. Because I don't want to be restless, irritable, discontented. You know, I don't want to be. It says in the 12 and 12, it says, they will tell how they tried to carry the load alone, how much they suffered of irritability, anxiety, remorse, and depression, and how unconsciously seeking relief, they would sometimes accuse even their best friends of the very character defects that they themselves were trying to conceal. I have learned that when I get upset with people or I'm disgusted with someone's behavior, what I've come to realize is I'm looking in the mirror. The very things I see them doing that piss me off is because I'm that person.
Mm.
That was a rude awakening for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know,
I don't want to be irritable and full of anxiety and remorseful and all that stuff. No, I like being happy, joyous, and free. And if I stay in gratitude, I get to choose being in a grateful state.
You know, it's funny you were talking about when you see something, and you know the big book. I think the Narcotics Anonymous Basic Text refers to this. The AA Big Book refers to this. Most spiritual writings of any nature refer to it. That when we, it's just worded a little differently, but when we see something in somebody else that disturbs us, maybe we ought to check ourselves, right? And so you alluded to that. Here's the excuse I would make, because we're great excuse makers, right? When we don't want to do the next right thing and want to control everything ourselves. This was my excuse. I'd say, okay, so you're telling me that when I see something in somebody else that disturbs me, there's something wrong with me. Well, I'm going to protest, because are you telling me that when I watch those SPCA commercials on TV and I'm disturbed about those poor little puppies and kitties, that there's something wrong with me? I am telling you it's because there's something right with me. Well, my sponsor, in all of his wisdom, said, you know that's not what we're talking about, you knucklehead. Of course there's something right with you. We're not talking about what's right with you, you know. But I would find things like that to justify my behavior, you know, until somebody would stand up to me and say, yeah, you know better than that. And so the part I wanted to share, and this was me, you guys, when I read this, man, did it just knocked me over. And this is on page 73 in the third edition of the Big Book of AA, Into Action. It says, more than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think that someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension that makes for more drinking. Oh my God, I read that, and I am telling you what, it caused me, I get goosebumps even now. That was like, hey buddy, here's a mirror and there ain't no coke on it for you to snort. It's just your face. Look at it. There I was. Every sentence was the actor. Every sentence was Monty. That was a hard pill to swallow. But you know what? When I read that, there was a freedom that happened, you guys. Something happened that knocked something loose in my head. And it was like, you know, it's okay to admit that I'm screwed up. And my journey took a whole different turn. And what had happened was, if you go over to page 75, it gives the promises. Now, every step has promises, right? If you do them. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of our past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. There's promise number one. We can look the world in the eye. There's another one. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Who doesn't want that? And that's exactly what happened. What an incredible promise, or handful of promises, you know. Do you guys find that those came true for you?
I was surprised.
What's that, buddy?
I was surprised they actually, when I first heard the promises, I was like, I was pretty new in the program, and I'm like, wait a minute here, I've already had some of these things happen.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, oh, I must be on my way. I must have arrived, and I'm on the path.
I got there early. Roger, how about this? We began to feel the nearness of our Creator. Amazing.
I can't speak enough about what's happened as a result of this program. You know, everything has opened up. I'm just a seeker of truth now. And like I said, I was a complete liar, and I would make excuses and explanations for whenever I got caught doing something I wasn't supposed to do. But I found out, why did I do those things to begin with?
Yeah.
It's just sick. It's really sick. And I don't want to be sick anymore. And when I found out that God actually had a plan for me, and it was right here in the fellowship, living the 12 steps and working with newcomers and sharing my experience, strength, and hope, my whole world started to change. And it just keeps changing and getting better all the time that I keep doing it. So why would I not do it?
Right.
I mean, we're all feel-good junkies, and we were trying to synthetically create feelings that we thought were so cool until they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized that we were escaping who we were. You know, the definition is we change our reality, and we cannot decipher the true from the false. When I started to realize that and digest that, I didn't want to be right. I wanted to do right. I wanted to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason. And the benefits from living like that are, they're priceless. You can't put them into words. The very thing that we were all seeking is what we find when we apply the 12 steps to every area of our life. And we stay in gratitude and thank God that we're alive today and we get to share this with other people. I've never experienced anything like it, plain and simple. Never. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps getting better.
Yeah. It's powerful stuff, guys. Now, I want to kind of wrap this up by looking at the three areas that it really focuses on here that a lot of people have issue with. And that's that this confession to these three entities, to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. Many of us have had problems with sometimes all three of those, sometimes just one of those. Why should we do this when we know when we've done that? But there's a really good reason why all three need to be addressed. True?
Yep. My counselor actually had me do to myself, like go to the bathroom and read my four-step back to myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And what did that do? Did that like open your eyes to some things? What did that do for you?
I think that was one of the things that started me off down the path of whenever I want to learn something or kind of really press it into my brain and my spirit,
mm-hmm.
is I'm actually writing it, I'm reading it out loud, and I'm doing some kind of visualization as well. And so that was like one of the first times I think I actually did something like that and learned how much of an impact it had on just my whole being.
Roger, why is it important to confess this to another human being?
So my first month of sobriety, I was in a program that was an alternative sentencing program. I was trying to stay out of jail. And I had that, I was at a crossroads, and I had that moment of clarity with the man in the mirror. And there was nobody there but me and God. And when I could find no person, place, or thing to blame for my consequences, I just realized that I was the problem, and hiding that I was the problem was not going to work out well for me. So the thing about admitting to God, it's like I'm telling God something he doesn't already know. I mean, that's just, to me, that is silly. He knows everything about me.
Right.
He has a purpose for my life and a plan for my life. So I don't have any issues with confessing to God. He already knows everything I did and loves me anyway. So that wasn't an issue. I came to the realization that I was the problem, so I admitted to myself. And when I did those two things, I had no issue telling my sponsor, or frankly, today, anybody else, the nature of my wrongs. And the more I did that, the more I was free from the very insanity that wanted me dead.
Yeah.
And the very insanity that I kept escaping and running from and lying about and cheating. And so now the gig was up. When I had that moment of clarity and nobody else to blame, I began this road of recovery. And yeah. I have now recovered from a hopeless state of mind, body, and spirit. And I love it. Why? So I'm going to keep being rigorously honest. I was never, ever rigorously honest in my entire life for any reason at any time before I started doing the steps. And I was 44 years old. So I spent 44 years of my life being a liar and playing. You know, I was a clown. I'd dress up. I had a mask on. I had a clown suit on because I guess I didn't want the truth to be known about who I really was in the inside or how I thought or what I did. I didn't realize that for years after doing the fifth step.
Mm.
It took time to come to that complete realization that I could not find any person, place, thing, God, or anybody else to blame for my consequences. And so I don't like those consequences. Why don't I do the right thing? And why don't I be honest about it? When I do the wrong thing, I don't want to hide it. I don't want to hide it.
Yeah. You know, that speaks a lot to the title of this chapter, Into Action. Right? So it's not... When we admit to God, it's not about informing God of something he doesn't know. It's about us being transparent, right? So this thing can change in us. And when we admit to God, we're in a relational exchange with our Creator. When we admit to ourselves, you know, it's not that we don't already know. Yeah, I know that I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief, and that I think I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof and pretty slick and cool. I know all that, right? So why do I need to tell myself? Well, it's not about me knowing. It's about me confessing. There comes that word again, confession. And when I'm talking to somebody else, it's so freeing, you know, it's a biblical principle. Our salvation is free. Our healing comes from confession one to another. You know.
And it's a commandment, not a suggestion.
Right. 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 And so if you want to be free, this is one of those areas that you must absolutely be thorough. And we, you know, the big book talks about people that have only thought they were honest about this step. And it did them in. You know, we lose people at step four because there's a lot of work to be done there and people don't like to work hard. We lose people at step nine because there's amends that need to be made and people don't want to face that. But I got to tell you, there's a lot of people we lose at step five and we don't even realize it, right? We think it's four and nine for the most part. I think mostly it's five, because if we cannot be honest, open, and transparent with those three entities, ourselves, somebody else, and God, we can't move forward. We just can't. It's not possible. I don't believe. Yeah. So there we go. Closing thoughts, guys. Dave, you first.
One I always love is if you're always honest, you don't have anything to remember.
That's very true. Roger, closing thoughts?
If you want to be free, then you have to get rid of your secrets. If you want to have a good life, enjoy life on life's terms. If you want to help somebody else, you have to be able to free yourself first.
Yeah.
And that happens through the process.
Yeah. Amen.
Do the do and you get the get.
Yeah. Well, one of my absolute favorite Matthew West songs we're going to close with, it says it all. It's called Truth Be Told.
Lie number one, you're supposed to have it all together. And when they ask how you're doing, just smile and tell them never better. Lie number two, everybody's life is perfect except yours. So keep your messes and your wounds and your secrets safe with you behind closed doors. Truth be told, the truth is rarely told. I say I'm fine, yeah, I'm fine, oh, I'm fine, hey, I'm fine, but I'm not. I'm broken, and when it's out of control, I say it's under control, but it's not. And you know it, I don't know why it's so hard to admit it, when being honest is the only way to fix it. There's no failure, no fall, there's no sin you don't already know. So let the truth be told. There's a sign on the door, says come as you are, but I doubt it. Cause if we lived like that was true, every Sunday morning pew would be crowded. Didn't you say church should look more like a hospital? A safe place for the sick, the sinner and the scarred and the prodigals like me. Well, truth be told, the truth is rarely told. Oh, am I the only one who says I'm fine? Yeah, I'm fine, oh, I'm fine, hey, I'm fine.
Mr. Matthew West. For more of his positive and encouraging music, visit his website at matthewwest.com. You know, we talk a lot about what is truth. We ask that question. There's your truth and my truth and their truth. But the truth of the matter is, there's never different versions of the truth. So, what is the truth today for you? Is it time to lay that fifth step open? Is it time to confess? It's something to think about. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Yeah, kitty, 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 kitty.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.